These sensations and the pain are felt in that part of the body served by the nerve. There is much about TMS that is mysterious, and one of the most difficult aspects of the syndrome to understand is the apparent involvement of tendons and ligaments. Tendinitis of the elbow, shoulder, or knee, for example, will often disappear in the course of treatment for TMS. It must be assumed, therefore, that these are part of the syndrome. If that is so, what is the physiologic alteration responsible for the pain? It has been generally assumed that tendinitis is the result of inflammation, but there is no evidence at all that this is so. Because it is part of TMS, one is tempted to think that oxygen deprivation is at work. Though tendons have no blood vessels, they are living tissue, and therefore must be supplied with nutrients and oxygen. It is reasonable to assume that the lack of oxygen is also responsible for tendon and ligament pain. Whatever the mechanism, it is clear that these structures are also involved in the charade mounted by the brain in the service of avoiding anxiety and anger. It is very important to know that tendinitis is one more part of the tension myositis syndrome. Let's review the physiology of TMS. It begins with certain emotional states that set in motion activity within the central nervous system, specifically the autonomic system. This results in local vasoconstriction and mild oxygen deprivation of certain muscles, nerves, tendons, and ligaments. This oxygen lack is responsible for the pain that is the primary manifestation of TMS, and the possibility of sensory abnormalities, numbness, pins and needles, and motor deficits such as weakness or tendon reflex changes. Why the mind has chosen to implicate these muscles, nerves, tendons, and ligaments in TMS seems beyond our capacity to comprehend at this time. Indeed, it is likely that at this point in the evolution of the human mind, we are incapable of understanding how the brain works generally, how it comprehends and produces language, how it thinks and remembers, and so forth. Understanding the mechanism of TMS is just one more of the many imponderables of human brain function. Though it may be of academic interest, knowing the physiology of TMS with certainty is not essential. We know how to stop the disorder, how to, quote, cure it, for we know its real cause. The chemical and physical changes that take place in the muscles, nerves, tendons, and ligaments that result in pain and other symptoms are the consequences of a process initiated in the brain for psychological reasons. Since any alteration of normal physiology resulting in physical symptoms would serve the same purpose, it is not important to know with precision what is going on in these tissues. As we shall demonstrate in the treatment of TMS, focusing on the physiology and symptomatology of TMS is actually counterproductive, tending to perpetuate rather than alleviate the problem. Though I find the chore distasteful, it is essential to review the large number of disorders to which neck, shoulder, back, and limb pain are routinely attributed. The listener should know what these diagnoses mean to the people who make them, to the many disciplines that treat them, and to the people who are diagnosed as having them. In the course of my lectures to patients with TMS, it is made clear that it is important to know what is causing the pain and what is not causing it, because many of the diagnoses to be described evoke great fear, and fear is a dominant factor in worsening and perpetuating the pain syndrome. In my experience, structural abnormalities of the spine rarely cause back pain. That shouldn't surprise us, for this epidemic of back pain is very new. Somehow, the human race managed to get through the first 500,000 years or so of its evolution without a problem. But if the structural diagnoses are correct, something happened to the spine during the last evolutionary eye blink, and it has begun to fall apart. This idea is untenable. One suspects that these spine abnormalities have always been there, but were never blamed for pain because there was no pain to blame them for. 50 years ago, back pain was not very common, but more importantly, nobody took it seriously. The epidemic of back pain is due to the enormous increase in the incidence of TMS during the past 30 years. Ironically, the failure of medicine to recognize and diagnose it has been a major factor in that increase. Instead of TMS, the pain has been attributed primarily to a variety of structural defects of the spine. It's essential to know that almost all of the structural abnormalities of the spine are harmless. With that in mind, let's take a look at the common conventional diagnoses. Though the back sufferer isn't aware of it, it is generally known by students of the spine that the last intervertebral disc, between the fifth lumbar vertebra and the sacrum, is more or less degenerated in most people by the age of 20. Discs are structures located between the bodies of spinal bones to take up the shock. They are firmly attached to the vertebral bodies above and below, and in no way can they slip. Enclosed by a tough, fibrous outer shell, there is a thick fluid inside, which is what absorbs the shock. The discs at the lower end of the spine and in the neck, because of all the activity in those locations, begin to wear out at an early age. As I mentioned, some by the age of 20. Although no one knows exactly what happens, the disc gets flatter, suggesting that the fluid inside has dried up or broken through a weakened part of the disc wall, usually toward the back. This breaking through the disc wall is what is known as a disc rupture, or more commonly, a herniation. It is probably similar to squeezing toothpaste from a tube. In some cases, the fluid does not break through, but merely bulges the wall. The important question is, what harm is done by this extruded disc material, if any? The conventional idea is that the toothpaste compresses a nearby spinal nerve, thereby producing pain. If it is the disc between lumbar vertebral L4 and L5, or L5 and the sacrum, the pain will be in the leg. If in the neck, there is arm pain. The leg pain is usually called sciatica. It has been my experience that herniated disc material is rarely responsible for pain or any other neurological symptom. This is a minority opinion, but I am not totally alone. A well-known neurosurgeon and chairman of his department at the University of Miami School of Medicine, Dr. Hubert Russell,